Welcome back to the Road to 1 Million podcast. Today I'm with Hunter, the founder and owner of AdMotive. Several of the guests I've had on the podcast actually utilize AdMotive for their Meta and Google ads. So I wanted to invite Hunter on and hear his story and also just get some insights, tips, and tricks into what the top shops are doing that separates them from the rest. There's a ton of really good information in this week's episode, and I hope you guys enjoy. I've had on a few different guys now that have advertising agencies, Stephen Lee, Ray Padilla, now Hunter. I'm a firm believer that you all can make an informed decision after listening to these guys for an hour. And I don't think that it's a one size fits all. I think that these guys all have their specialties. These guys all have a ton of really good experience. They all work with great shops. And so listen to them, hear them all out. And I think that you guys can probably pick up whether or not you think you'd be a good partner with them. And if not, then reach out to them. I know that all these guys would be more than happy to have a conversation and just kind of see what they can do to help you. So I hope you guys enjoy. Don't forget, you guys can use the timestamps in the description to skip ahead. And without further ado, let's get right into it. All right, today I'm with Hunter, owner of AdMotive. Hunter, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I was just saying how a lot of my guests that I've had on, a lot of the different shops, I know that they've used you guys, they continue to use you guys, and have spoke really highly of you guys. So I'm excited to talk with you today. I've got a whole page of questions here for you, so I hope you're ready.
Oh boy, I'll do my best.
Cool. Well, tell me before we get into some of the more practical questions, tell me, how did you get started with this thing? I don't know. Walk me through the beginning and kind of your journey.
Yeah, I feel like I have a pretty unique journey into how we got to where we are. I had no intentions of becoming an ad agency, even just for detail when I first got into business. Essentially got started where it was me and a couple of the friends. They were all real big car people back in, I think it was 2015. Started this idea of like, okay, what can we do together that involves cars? So again, being car enthusiasts, when you thought of detailing. This is before detailing got cool. I feel like back in 2015, before the big bubble happened with everything. So we started a mobile business back then. And then I went to college, I went to Rowan University. I still was going on my original plan to be a physicist. I want to be an aerodynamicist. I want to be a physicist. I want to be an engineer. That was my career path on there. So we're running on the detailing business on the side. That was paying for our beer money. That was paying for just the basic stuff to get some, you know, my couple of chicken cutlets for the entire week there. And, you know, the typical college student kind of meals and everything that happens on there. So then we're running the detail business. And then we realized that we actually had something pretty special here. At the time in New Jersey, South Jersey, where we're located, it was just us and one other shop, or one other detail business, I should say, there. So we had a pretty good opportunity on there, and we capitalized on it. And I switched over from physics degree over into business and marketing. I realized that was probably a better fit for me. I don't know if that my brain cells couldn't handle physics, where I feel like I was better fit for business and marketing, but I found more passion in actual building businesses. I found that I fell in love with it. A lot of my great professors, they own businesses, I talked to them for a great deal of time about how it works. And my mind was just opened up like, wow, to the business world. This is pretty awesome there. So coming from the detailing background, I switched over to business marketing, ran that side of the detail business. And then what happened was I was running on marketing for a business. And then my mom was a receptionist at her dentist office. And she said, hey, can you run some ads for you guys? Or us too. I said, sure, not a problem. I the same basic principles of marketing. Let's give it a shot. Let's see what happens here. They have great success in everything we're doing. And next thing, one thing led to another. Another shop approaches, hey, can you run ads for us? Hey, can you run ads for us? Next thing you know, I'm detailing from 8 to 4, 8 to 5. And then from 5 to 10 at night, I'm running ads for other detailers and helping them and coaching and kind of showing them how we've done certain things and showing me how to run ads and all that kind of stuff. And I found more passion on the business side, continuing on that path there. So there was one day where I said, hey, you know what? I'm going to go full time with this agency and see what I can build out of this one. It's also before agencies were cool, and it was before digital marketing became cool and popular for everyone to join on as well. So then went full time with the agency back in it was right when lockdowns lifted back up. So I believe that was like 2021. I went full time with it, and it was just me for a while. And then over the course of time, we built up to where we're at now. Now we have AdMotive. We have a team of 22 here, including myself, currently helping out approximately around 100 shops across the country, a couple of people international. And that's how we got to where we are.
That's awesome, dude. It's super cool that you actually started your own mobile detailing business. So like you understand the ins and outs of the detailing world.
Oh yeah. It's required. Detailing is such a, you have to be in it to really understand how the business operates. It's nothing like roofing or anything like that, where you can kind of just hop into it. And I'm not to discredit anything like that, but for like detailing, you have to understand the differences between like the actual, you know, SiO2, 9H, why people buy, and really go into depth on that side. So it's a really unique industry where if you know, you know. If you don't, it's kind of different looking from the outside in.
Yeah. Whenever you were starting to, so you started with your mom's dentist office, and then when you started to get these shops that you were running ads for, these other detailing shops, how are you going about getting those customers?
For myself, for the agency and the other detailers?
Yeah. Like, did you advertise on social media or?
Not yet. No, it was just word of mouth at the first beginning times and everything. So I think the first big shop we worked with was a shop named Jonathan Monson, Dirty Dream. You might have known of him. He's relatively pretty famous online with that. He was one of the biggest guys we started working with at the time. And then he gave us a shout out, said, hey, these guys are absolutely crushing it for a week. And he's a phenomenal story too on what he's built on that side. But he's one of the biggest shops we started working with way back in 2021 or 2022, maybe early 22. And he shouted us out. And from there, we actually had a full-fledged LLC, the whole business at that point there, and really started growing. So that was kind of like the launch pad for us.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. And so did you start doing social media around that time whenever you went full time?
Yeah, then I started posting consistently online. I think I try to post at least once a day, every day for the past 5 years. That's how we do mostly of our marketing there. Obviously, there's some changes and kind of different things we'll do on that side, but that's how we get most of our people. Now, of course, referrals is how we continuously, that's our, it's funny enough, like a marketing agency, we prefer getting referrals, but we started running ads recently too, just based on the systems we have built, just different business model. I don't want to onboard 15 shops a month. That's not what we want to do. We're a big agency with a small agency feel and very, very personal in how we do everything from top to bottom, from the communication. And as people are often surprised where they come on board with us and they understand, like they see everything that works on the back end, like, oh, you guys are much larger than we thought you guys were. I'm like, that's kind of the feel we want to go for.
Yeah, that's cool. I wanted to mention or ask you something. You mentioned detail bubble. What do you mean by detail bubble? I mean, I think I know what you mean, but I want to know what you mean when you said that.
Oh man, I don't have to discredit anybody, but you know, people see stuff on social media and like, oh, detailing is a get rich quick kind of thing there. When all reality, we know it's not true, right? Any business you see online, like, oh, it looks easy to start. You get into it, I'm like, wow, this is much harder than actually it seems on that side. So social media definitely propped up detailing just because it is a low barrier to entry industry to get into. You only need a couple hundred bucks to really get started. We see and hear phenomenal stories of people who are just starting out of their parents' garage. They have a cheap Toyota Camry that's barely running. They started detailing and built these empires on there. It's a really, really great story. So it's really when it came around there and people realize how easy it is to get started, but how hard it is to actually continue with it. And same thing with digital marketing too. Now there's quite a few out there that try to hop in industry and everything like that. So it's been interesting so far.
So with that being said, for guys that maybe they've had a detailing business or they're just getting started, what do you think in 2025? I mean, we're going into the second, well, basically the very end, fourth quarter here soon of 2025. What do you think makes the most sense to separate yourself from the competition? Like if you've got no marketing or you're just posting like after photos of cars that you're doing?
It's a good question. I would say do what others aren't willing to do. And that doesn't mean in terms of jobs. I'm talking about the actual marketing part there. When it comes down to any great shop, you look at any shop, what is the number one thing they focus on? It's going to be the relationships they build with their customers and the experience. If you interview any top shop, that's exactly what they say. And that's what we see too with our top guys as well. So when you first start out, you don't have money, but what you do have is time. So what you do is you spend your time on building those relationships. You spend your time on the weekends to going out these cars and coffees and just talking to people. If you're one to pursue dealerships, go and just talk to people, build a network, go to your local business, chamber of commerce, and everything that you just got to shake more hands as possible there. So once you start doing that one, you start to really ingrain yourself, because what happens is people are intimidated by being in person a lot of times, especially when they're first starting out. Their confidence is low. They're not sure they can do certain things. Now, of course, it doesn't apply to everybody. Some people are just naturally very extroverted. They have that confidence to go, I'm like, yeah, I can knock out all these cars for you guys and everything like that. But just doing the things other people don't. And the bar is pretty, I say this very carefully, the bar is very low to be successful in this industry, because essentially all you have to do is just work longer and harder than most people. You have to, of course, you'll be on camera. A lot of people don't like being on camera on social media. As you know, it does wonders for a lot of people. And just go out and shake some hands. And a lot of people are scared of that one, and especially when you first start out there. So it really comes down to just being that personal person, that community.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. I think on that point too, professionalism too is probably really important, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's part of the experience too. And understanding that, like, you're not just, let's say, a hunter with your little detail in business. Like, you're a full-fledged operation that can accomplish these things.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't mean you have to have like the super nice van or like the wrap truck. Cause I think a lot of guys that are just getting into it, maybe they're doing a little bit on the weekends. Like, they automatically go and spend $50,000 on a van setup and get it wrapped. And I don't think you have to do that to be professional.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. And people actually will buy into that too, in terms of they'll root for you. They'll root for you and see that where they're coming from and there. And then just being a regular person. Again, you still provide professional experiences on how you show up, how you conduct your business, how you communicate, and how you get the service done, and even the post service experience as well.
Yeah. What changes are you seeing this year, or even towards like the later end of this year, that maybe you were surprised by, or like you didn't see like last year in 2024, like particularly with marketing?
It's an interesting question, because there's always changes that go on. I think one of the common themes we see is leads having the power of options. There are more and more people, or more and more detail shops in the areas. I think now you can throw a rock and hit like four different detailers. And I think a lot of people can speak to that one, how they say it's saturated and everything, but it just means more opportunity, right? So the way we have to market, the way we sell, is completely different than how we did it in the times past. Before, what happened was someone would inquire with the guys, you can sit on the lead for a little bit, say, hey, I'm going to give you a call in the next couple of days, because you're the only option they really had. But now people have different options, where if you don't pick up the phone, if you don't get to the lead and contact them with even 5 minutes, chances are they're probably going to go talk to another shop down the road. That is the reality we do live in. However, it is solvable. It is easily fixable based on those what I mentioned there. So that's probably the biggest change that we've seen on how we market and how we actually sell.
Mm. So it sounds like there's a little bit more responsibility now on the shops or the detailers to put in a little bit more effort. You know, they need to be reaching out quicker. I've seen that you've posted that a lot on your Facebook.
Yeah. I mean, we track all these stats across all of our shops that we work with there. So we're very, very hands-on, and we're very analytical about how we see, because success does leave breadcrumbs. If someone is getting a 30X return on the ad spend, I want to know what they're doing differently than everybody else there. So we'll track everything and see what they're doing differently. And typically it is going to be, they get to leads within 5 minutes, answer all phone calls. They follow up at least 10 times until the lead says yes or no on that side. A lot of resistance we build on the back end to make that accessible to everybody. Because I know some solo guys listen to us, I'm like, there's no way I can answer all that phone calls. There's no way I can get to every lead for 5 minutes. There's a lot of systems you can build that at least entertains that lead, or at least answers the phone in some degree while you can get to them on there. So,
Yeah. 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 It is hard for the solo guys. Right. And like, I don't know, I'm sure that a lot of those, the way that those guys kind of separate themselves, I know that we did this when we started, was just through prices. Cause it's like, well, if I can't be the first to answer the phone, I mean, we always still tried to do that in the beginning, because you do usually have more time on your hands, especially when you're first starting. It's kind of when you get to that, like around $10,000 a month mark, $5,000 to $10,000, you're still kind of by yourself. It's like, man, that's when things get hard. you got to start like considering hiring someone that they can kind of help with the detailing while you answer the phone. That's a tough mark. And I mean, that doesn't stop either. Like I've noticed that even now as we're growing, you keep getting to that point where you're like stretching yourself, but you can't quite afford to hire someone else.
Exactly. We call it no man's land. Between that $10,000 and $15,000 a month range, we call it no man's land because you have to do something new and scary. Hiring is new and scary. You have never had to hire someone really to that point there on getting the extra additional help there. You might have to invest something into marketing. You might have to invest and change your CRM system because you can get away with a lot below $10,000 a month. Like you can do, I've done this personally before where my CRM was actually my notepad. Okay. Say John's showing up today at 12 o'clock. Sally's showing up today at 2 o'clock. I write down a notepad on there. When you get to that point of like $12,000, $13,000, $14,000, $15,000 a month, that becomes almost a bottleneck in the business there. So you have to change a lot on there. And you definitely have to just take a jump when you get to that point and actually just kind of continue to follow through because a lot of scary stuff does happen. You need to change systems. You have to learn different things to do. You have to hire. You have to train. There's all different skill sets you have to do. And you really, it's when you start transitioning from a detailer to a business owner, because those are two different skill sets, being a detailer and being a business owner, completely two different things there. So that's why you start to see again at no man's land, because you have to start to transition from a detailer to a business owner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to know how you guys do ads for like tent shops as well, correct?
Of course. Yes. We do wraps, tents, PPF, coatings, exclusively in the detail industry.
Okay. So we recently got into window tint at the start of this year, and maybe it's because we're just still new to it. But I've noticed that the leads they're totally different than like detailing leads and ceramic coating leads. And even detailing leads are different from ceramic coating leads, but with window tinting, it seems like everyone knows what the product is, and I'm getting, at least it feels like I'm getting a lot more tire kickers, people that are just shopping solely based on price. Yeah. So I've kind of, my theory in my head is to get a higher increase in conversions, a higher closing rate on my leads for window tinting in particular, I need to be answering the phone, like you said, quickly. And I need to be able to offer like same week, if not next day, window tint jobs. And then have options too. That's kind of been my theory, is like having like a good, better, best option. So let people pick. What is your thoughts on that? Like, is there something I'm missing? Am I totally off base there?
No, I mean, exactly what we see too, because window tint is a commodity. It's roughly the same product across the entire market there. And obviously there's dye tint, there's ceramic tint, there's all different kinds of tint on there. But for most people, they don't really understand that part there. So when it comes to actually ads, what you can do to increase lead quality is you add friction points. And friction points just means it's harder for someone to get in contact with you or give them a reason to contact you. You might think that sounds really counterintuitive. Don't you want people to actually call me? Well, when it comes to window tint, you don't want to be dealing with a 99 dye tint people, or maybe you have a certain price point of window tint. Is it, hey, quality? Maybe you start at 150 or something like that. So we actually do to increase the lead quality on the front end is, one, first and foremost, you can say, hey, our pricing starts at $200. That automatically disqualifies people who are looking for the $100 tint, right? Other things you can do is, instead of doing, let's just say you have a Facebook ad where you do the lead form where it's so easy for someone to submit a contact form, bring them to a landing page, send them to your website, and make them actually have to search for that contact form on there. Don't put it at the top of the fold. Just tuck it down below, make them go through and qualify themselves further and make the form a little bigger. So it's always a balance between, we do this internally too, of balancing when we launch campaigns, is it's so easy to get leads nowadays from ads. What we're trying to do is get the highest quality lead. That's what the shop deserves there. So more, some people just, hey, just get me as many leads as possible. Sure, not a problem. But where real challenge is, and is really where people hire us, is getting the people who are actually looking for the services, the people who actually have that want to buy the services in there. So you definitely have to add more friction points onto the ad.
Mm-hmm. How long do you guys leave an ad running before you decide whether or not it's a dud?
It depends on the budget. So essentially, sometimes we'll say for a Google ad, it has to be at least probably a week or two. We'll assume like $33 per day is that trick for Google. If you spend that amount, Google will do whatever you want to do relative to the market. in LA, you probably spend a little bit more, but if you're out there in a little bit smaller town, that's perfectly fine what you do there. So on Google, whenever time you make a change or launch a campaign, it's in what's called a learning phase for the first week or two, where Google is just, okay, is this a legitimate ad? Is this a real business? Let's check this out there. So you put a campaign on there and it starts learning. And usually in the first week or two, you'll start to know whether the ad actually works or not based on the clicks you guys are getting, based on the lead quality that comes in there, what kind of vehicles are coming in, how their leads, are they responsive, do they have 2025s, are they 91 Civics, what are they kind of things on there. Facebook is much, much quicker, usually be able to tell within the first couple of days of if it's a dud or not, but you always have to make sure that whatever campaigns that you have something running continuously.
Mm. Yeah, like you don't want to be pausing it and then starting it back up again.
That kills all momentum all the time. And we see that a lot too, where people will pause a campaign, they'll make the changes, and set it back out there, it resets it every single time.
Mm. So is it better, would you say it's better to leave up a campaign that's not performing as well than just completely pause it or shut it off?
I'd be careful that one, because you don't want to send money out there just for the sake of sending money. Like if you're really just wasting money, then you're better off just killing it right then and there. But it's about identifying it before it even happens. There's a lot of signals you can look at inside the ad account. Okay, maybe this ad's getting stale. It's time to change it up. Let me make some changes before it goes completely a dud.
Hmm. What in particular are you looking for?
A lot of it comes down to, we say the lead quality nowadays, is when we start to get the bad quality leads and bad responses, that's when we know it's starting to go downhill. Or maybe the lead cost is starting to increase. So for like Facebook, for example, when we start to see the lead costs start creeping up and almost doubling, that's okay. It's time to put something else out there and test new creatives all the time.
So yeah, do you just test the new creative or do you go straight to like the ad copy?
It depends on what we feel the bottleneck would be. Typically the content is going to be the most important part of any Facebook ad of actually showing. And there's, we can talk about that too, in terms of what makes actually a good Facebook ad, because usually it's not the targeting anymore. It's not necessarily going to be the ad copy, definitely plays a role. And especially the headline, you need to have something to hook somebody, but the actual what's being shown in the Facebook ad is by far the most important on there.
Hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about the creative itself, because, lately a lot of our ads, we've been just using the content that we've created, like on our daily post. We've just been, you know, taking a few of those and split testing them. And so they aren't quite as, they're not quite as like salesy, mm-hmm. as like, you know, your traditional advertisement. And I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? Like some of our ads have been like step-by-step how we do a ceramic coating instead of like, hey, if you're in Springfield, Missouri and you're looking for a ceramic coating, like, you know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. There's a structure that works. Now there's a difference between being seen and getting the people that you want. Like marketing 101 is letting people know you exist. So you can put anything out there and have something, right? That's marketing 101. Marketing 201 is letting the right people know that you exist. And then marketing 301 is letting the right people know you can solve their problems, right? So that's what we want to hit on that side. And that's how you get the quality of leads. So typically the best structure, what we've seen from a Facebook ad, is going to be a direct call out, like you said. So if you're in, like, say, Kansas City, Missouri, say, hey, Kansas City on there. Just because what happens is on Facebook, Instagram, trust is very low. So what we have to do is we have to directly call the area, it gets their attention, and then you go into something along the lines of you walking through the shop, explaining what's going on. Because the thought process that we have on when we create these ads is always lead first. Okay, well, how can we produce the highest quality lead on that side? So what we think about is when someone goes to your shop, just stops by your shop, the chances of you closing are very, very high, right? Because what happens is they see you. They see the people working on the vehicles. They're talking to you. They see the shop. They see their actual cars being in there. So the trust is being built up on that side. That trust is right there already. We take that and we try to put that at the front of the first time they're seeing you guys. So you want to bring that experience into the ad. So again, they say, hey, Kansas City, I am Joshua. This is what we do here. And you kind of walk through the shop, explain the process. You can show employees on there. And it brings that connection at the forefront there. And then, of course, once you go through there, you have to have a call to action. A call to action is, hey, if you want to get a quote with us, click down below or something like that. Because you have to manufacture that customer journey from start to end there. You have to direct and tell people what you want them to do. So if it's a call, if it's getting a contact form, whatever it may be, you have to guide them through. And it continues from the start of the ad all the way down to when they actually submit the contact form to when they actually come into the shop. The more you can do to guide them through, it's all part of the experience, right? It's the customer experience. When they come to your shop and actually you're paying you guys, you always have to do that one. We all have to do that from the very start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed a lot of my leads, I try to ask them like how they found us. And I noticed that you said that you're always tracking where your leads are coming from. Like I've seen you post about that a lot. And it's really interesting, like when you just ask someone how they found us. Like I had a guy this week who had his 2023 Corvette ceramic coated, and it was $1,200 job. And he told me, he's like, "Oh, do you know Sid?" And I was like, "Yeah, of course I know Sid. He does all of our dent repair for all of our customers." He's like, "That's why I saw your ad, and I saw that he followed you, and this was a service that he was thinking about getting." And so I was like, "Oh, that's really interesting. That like it was like that mutual connection that." Yeah. And I've had people said that before. Like I saw this guy followed you, so, and he's always got shiny cars. So I figured out, you know, I got to trust you too.
Yeah. And that's why referrals close so high, because they're passing the trust over to their friend there. Say, "Hey, my friend John uses you guys. So therefore he trusts you. Therefore I'm going to trust you." So that's why referrals work.
Yeah. But in this sense, it wasn't even like a direct referral. It wasn't like John called up this guy and was like, "Hey, go use Belk." Instead, it was like, he just follows us. And so the fact that he just saw that we followed, or he followed our Facebook page, was enough to automatically trust us, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, that's all social proof. Same in the game. Again, we're in a trust economy with all industries, right? People, the trust is so low online. There's so many ads out there, so much pieces of content, so much nonsense going on, where people just want to look for some point of credibility and really, I'd almost say integrity, but just really the credibility and just understand that this is a legitimate business. They're doing good work. Therefore, I'm going to go with them. And that's the kind of what you need to build on the ad side.
Mm-hmm. Are you noticing photo ads? Are those doing well anymore? Or is it all video?
Videos, I mean, picture ads still have their place, but 98% of our content that we produce on Facebook, Instagram are videos, because it passes more information off into the person. It tells more information to that lead there. Again, going and showing around the shop, showing you guys, showing the employees. You can do that in certain pictures. Like you can have a team photo in front of a car. You can have a picture of a customer in front of a car or something like that that kind of showcases that you are real people and have social proof, but the videos will still outproduce the pictures.
Hmm. How long does it take to find, or maybe how many ads and split testing, but how long does it take to find that piece of like viral content when it comes down to Facebook marketing?
The more the merrier. There isn't a definitive amount of what that number is on how many it takes there. Sometimes it's perfect right out of the gate, but there's always room for improvement. There's always things you can build out of it. The biggest thing is just finding what connects in the market. Because if I just copied and pasted the same structure for all of our shops across the country, we wouldn't be in business, right? So it's learning about what their leads and what their customers respond to in a specific market. So is it more family stuff? Is it more salesy stuff? Is it kind of going into the price? Is it more talking about the process? That's all things we kind of consider when we're looking at in each part there.
Hmm. That's interesting that like some markets react differently to others.
Absolutely. I mean, what we see in like the rural market, for example, the Facebook ads typically do produce much better than Google ads, just because people are a little more receptive to that kind of stuff there. So it's markets are wildly, wildly different there. So that's why we see all the time where someone will say, "Hey, this shop is having success with this type of marketing." It's sometimes not even ads. Sometimes it's just like showing up to like a nice steakhouse and just parking your van out there. Sometimes it's doing this. And they try doing that and doesn't have the same success. So it's really just finding out what makes you guys unique, what works in your market, and then leveraging that.
Yeah. And when you find what works, then like running with that.
Exactly. Then that's when it gets fun. Then it's time to scale that.
Yeah. And then I would imagine that once you've kind of found that, then when it comes down to switching it up a little bit, because you don't want certain ads to become stale, but I would imagine that's probably easier because, you know, maybe you just change up the verbiage a little bit and maybe do a new offer, but same kind of direction.
Yep, exactly. What we'll do is we'll have different bits and bobs of the ads. We have video editors on staff. So what we'll do is, let's just say there is a winning type of structure for one shop and as a video is absolutely killing it. What we can do is we can take the call to action out of it and like Frankenstein it into a new ad, put the end of another one and test different headlines, test different bodies. At all times, we're going to have it. I mean, again, depends on budget, but at all times, we're going to have at least 3, 4, 5 different videos out there at a time. Now, if you have a bigger budget, you're spending, let's say, $5,000 a month in Facebook ads, and we'll definitely put as many as we can out there. But it's all about just continuing to keep something new in the place and keep testing and keep testing.
Mm-hmm. I've got some detailers that I know, some I've had on the podcast that live in these like super small towns, like population of like less than 15,000. And a lot of them I know are like hesitant to want to run ads there or even do business there. It's like, I need to go to, you know, the next town over that's 45 minutes away. And what I've told them is like, I feel like there's more business there than what you think.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
I would. That's why sometimes Facebook ads work better for those rural markets, is because you create the market there. You create the demand for your service by talking about the pain points that they have over there. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly worth in that way. It works in that way. Of course, what you have to do for those more smaller markets is going into a little bit more in-person stuff. Sometimes if it's that small town feel, go into your local chamber of commerce, go into your local business network groups and shake a lot of hands. And that also compounds too, where let's just say you're running Facebook ads for a while and you pop up to a business event. Like, I know you, I've seen you those ads. We've seen it all the time too for our shops where they're running ads for a while. They'll go into, let's say, a Cars and Coffee. Next thing, they're a local celebrity because everyone's seen them before. And it all plays in part of that brand and building something that people want to be a part of.
Yeah. I've had so many people tell me that, since we started posting every day in the last year and just doing more personable content, they never liked my videos. But as soon as I see them out, they're like, I've seen every one of your videos.
Yep. People are watching, you know, that's why we can't get wrapped up in likes and views and everything. People do watch these kind of things. So just because someone doesn't like actually like the post or like the video doesn't mean it's actually doing anything for them. Right. A lot of the time it's educating. It's just building that presence that we have. So yeah, that's why we can't get wrapped up in trying to be viral. Because for me personally, if I wanted my content to be viral, I'll just post memes all day. But that's not what I want to do. I don't want to be famous, because what we're trying to do is you want to be famous to the right people. And being famous to the right people for me is the detailers, right? I don't want to be famous and world renowned for and start getting like people looking to get roof marketing and doing other things on there. This is why I want to be famous for, is in the detail industry there. So same thing with your market too, right? People try to, they get really intimidated with content. Like, oh, I don't know what video is going to get me a million views, or I don't know what, or something like that, or get me a million likes or something like that. Like, that's not going to change your business, right? Your market is on the people in your radius who are actually going to buy from you. So what good does it do for you to have people that are 2,000 miles away seeing your content? It's not really going to do so much. Though, sure, it might be social proof. You get more followers and people see your detailing business account has 20,000 followers. Okay, it might be a legitimate business. Sure, there might be some truth to that one, but people will try to overcomplicate it and try to put too much weight on going viral. So just really just focus on your own market. That's all you need. That's the people that pay your bills. We joke about all the time too, where a lot of times detailers will make content for other detailers where we're not paying each other's bills, right? We always joke about all the time. And so just make the content for your community. That's all you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a few shops that I know that are doing over 6 figures a month, and I've seen a lot of posts from them that get 3 likes, 5 likes, and I'm like, they're crushing it though. And the content, it's still good content in my opinion, and they say top of mind, and it's just a testament to like what's more important, going viral. And that's just the silly thing is like, I think a lot of people would actually, at least at first, they would rather go viral and not have any business than be doing like 6 figures a month. Like genuinely, I think a lot of people actually think that. It's so silly.
Absolutely. It's part of ego, right? It feeds ego. It feels good. I'll admit sometimes too, if I post something and it gets a lot of likes, I'm like, it feels nice. But I know it doesn't pay the bills. So we're all guilty of that to some degree. But it's a lot of it is ego filling when we have a video that pops off, gets the likes, it gets validation on there. And it's also a testament too that sometimes we put too much a validation on what people perceive us, when people think about us, because for us, when we have videos that go viral, that subconsciously tells us that we're doing something right. but that's not the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. The algorithm has a way of, I don't know. It just kind of, it values attention. And I found that some of our, even some of our ads, like I think that Facebook, whenever we're split testing them, they'll push it to more people. So like if I've got like a $20 a day budget across like five different ads, but one ad is like getting a lot of attention, even though it might not be getting a lot of like high quality leads, it'll show that ad to them more. It'll spend all of my budget on that one ad, and you kind of have to go in and shut it off. Are you seeing that too?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it depends on how they have the ad optimized and how you have it actually set up there. So let's just say, for example, you have one campaign, one ad set and like four different ads on there. Facebook will find the one that's actually starting performing and then keep running with that and won't spend on the other on the other ads there. So if you really want to test it, have different campaigns. So have like one Facebook campaign for this, one Facebook campaign for that one. So at all times it's spending that $20 each, or 10 and 10, however you have it split up there. But yeah, it's certainly a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that going into the end of this year in like 2026, is there anything that like you're seeing, like, I don't know, just ideas that you have that like you think these things are going to become more prevalent?
It's a good question. I think that people want to be part of something bigger than them in a way, where I think you'll start to see a lot of the shops that succeed become more lifestyle brands more than anything. Now, I might say that you might be like, what are you talking about? Where you have people that have bars inside their shop. You have people that sell merch inside their shop. You have people that host events in their shop. I think that's a direction we'll start to see more and more of. You even see it for live popular, let's say coffee shop, for example. They have merchandise. They have events hosted there. They have part of their community. They're bringing people in there. I think that's probably the direction you'll see more and more people go towards. And that's true for any brand too, right? Where it's more the business, it's more visibility. It's really just bringing on that customer experience that we keep talking about.
Yeah. There's a company here in Springfield called Supplement Superstore, and they do a really good job of that. And Andy Frisella, who's the CEO, he's kind of a big personality on social media, and he's got his own podcast. But he really preaches that. I know with their culture, you know, they're always doing events and they're always showing up to different gyms. I mean, I feel like each of those guys that works there have a membership at every single gym in town, and they just had an event last weekend. And so, yeah, just very like actively involved in the community, and they give everyone free shirts. So like everyone's got Supplement Superstore shirts at the gym, and it's like that lifestyle brand that's what I thought of when you said that.
Yeah, exactly. I just met his name's Tony over at Fusion Gyms. He's in Locating Philly. He's built incredible, incredible gyms and incredibly successful in what he does. And I was over to help him picking his brain for a very brief moment because he was very busy with everything going on. And that was exactly what he said. It's just building that culture. When someone goes to his gym, they're not just going to the gym. They're going there to hang out with other people and talk to other things. They have eventually they're going to build a restaurant on top of everything. They're doing all these different things here to cater to that customer experience overall, because it's no longer just a gym. Because when you're just a gym, or in this scenario, you're not just a detail shop. If you're just a detail shop, you're now being commoditized and you're the same thing, you're the same person or same business as the four other people in your area. So it's about standing out and uncommoditizing yourself or decommoditizing yourself in marketing and sales and as a business of being someone different. Because what happens is if you're just a detail shop, you're the same as everybody else, and they see that you charge, let's say, $2,000 for a full front, and then there's other people that charge the same and lower prices and higher prices, they're going to view all you guys as equal. And then what happens is if you're as equal, the only thing people have something to judge you on is the price. When you judge on price, people are going to default to the lower option, right? So you have to make sure people understand what actually makes you different.
Yeah. And part of that is like creating the family feel of it. Is like this, you're a part of my team, you're a part of my family, and you kind of take care of people that way. People like to feel a part of something like that. So I think that if they can associate you, especially when they start talking with their friends and their friends use you, I don't know, it kind of becomes like this click in a sense.
Exactly. I mean, we keep going back to that common theme of relationships over everything, right? And experience and relationships. So when you can take into that some of that and put it into marketing at the forefront, it just lets people know that you're real, that you're a real person.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you do that really well? Like, how do you show that personable family feel of your business on social media?
That's a good question. There's a balance of it, right? Some people are really hesitant to show their family. I'm not saying you have to go show your wife and your kids and your grandparents and everything. That's not what I'm saying. It's not the message on there. But it's just being available for people to talk to. Even if you're an owner of a large shop, having your employees be a part of it, right? Each one have their own individual personality and bringing that in there. The easiest way, of course, is just having you guys on content, having you guys on video, and really just having your own personality and everything. People are really scared that when they come to video content, they're trying to be as professional as possible. And they're very, like, try to stay in their lane, very straight on how they do everything. But sometimes you just have to let loose a little bit. And I'm not saying go and be humor and do all these kind of things, but you can still have that professionalism in content, that professionalism while having a personality behind everything. So if I want to look at your company, I understand, like, what are your values? What do you guys like? What can I expect with everyone? If you look at a very straight shot, like detail shop, a very straight shot business, it can be very easy to be commoditized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we started doing that a little bit more this last year, where I'll go around and ask the guys, all my employees, I'll ask them a question. So I'll be like, hey, Austin, what's the worst detailing advice you've ever heard? And yeah. Those videos, some of them have gone viral, but what's cool is I've had people come into the shop, customers that actually live here, they do business with us, they pay our bills, and they'll come in and they already know the guys' names and faces because mm-hmm. they've seen those videos.
That's awesome. That's perfect. It goes right into the customer experience. When they feel like they can call the people by the employees and by their names and everything, they feel bought into everything. You'll probably never lose that customer because no longer is it Belk Detailing. It's Joshua. It's John. It's Anthony. I'm just listing names of your shop and everything. I'll never forget. This is what turning point for me. So back in the day, where this is where I kind of really learned customer experience, I had a C6 Corvette where I think I just needed just new tires put on, right? And everyone knows getting new tires, like rotated, put on, everything like that. You drop your car off and you leave everything. There was one shop in particular where I dropped off. They were known for performance parts and everything. I went to drop my keys off and I went to turn around to go leave. I assumed that was it. They say, hey, do you want to come check out the shop? And look in the back. I'm like, hell yeah, that'd be awesome. It's really cool. So I'll never forget. They actually walked me through a shop. They introduced me to the employees. They showed me some projects they worked on. And that really connected. It took 3 minutes for them to do that. And then it kicked me out, but I'll never forget that as a customer. I was like, I feel attached to this business now. I'll never forget that one. And that's why I introduced it into women our shops or on our calls with us, all the things they can do. So that's what we preach. And I'll never forget about that. And I was probably the same time when I started e-telling business. So
that's awesome. Another thing too is like offering them something like a water or a drink, you know? Oh, I'm gonna get you something, you want a water? Like, I'll do that with most of my customers whenever they come in.
Oh, yeah. Better yet, there's like, don't even give them the option. Do you want to say, hey, do you want coffee or water? And they're like, oh, water, sure. It sounds good. And that definitely elevates the experience.
Yeah. Well, and because you would like that, like, you think about it as like if you're going over to a friend's house or a family member's house, like, if you're hosting, you would do that because it's a good, hospitable thing to do. It's nice. People like it. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with business. Like, don't overcomplicate it. You know, just think about how you would want to be treated if you go over to someone's house. You know, you would want to be introduced to every single person that's there. I hate that when you go somewhere and you only know like one person who invited you and they don't introduce you. It's like, take a minute. Hey, this is him. This is her. Introduce everyone, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, like, people are, especially in the auto industry where we're so used to dealing with all the shops, you drop your car off and everything, that sticks with somebody. It brings them part of the family. And again, people want to be part of something, again, bigger than that. They want to be a part of a cool experience. So that's a really good way. And they feel like they have something on their side. Like, this is like a really cool business. I want to be like, I'm going to support them. And it goes further into referrals. They get more referrals of the customer experience too. So like, hey, you know what? You guys are really cool. I met the guys in the back that showed me around there. Hey, did you know they were working on this cool vehicle that I love and everything like that? So yeah, it really plays into everything goes on to marketing and sales. So when you do that, of course, marketing just amplifies the business that you have. So it makes our job a hell of a lot easier.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of listeners to this podcast that they don't have a shop yet. They're doing mobile, or maybe they've got a shop, but it's not like, I don't know. Like, you think you need to have the $1 million shop or like the best equipment to be able to do that, but it's not true. You can do that stuff. For example, I had a customer, we're at a car wash. So our shop is literally located on site at a car wash. And I had a guy that had like, it was like a 10-year-old vehicle that he wanted ceramic coated. And when we told him we're at a car wash, he kind of shrugged and was like, I don't want to come to the car wash. That's really weird that you're at a car wash. And that's fine. But we've had people that have Rolls Royces that have also dropped their car off at the car wash, you know? And so there's going to be some people, yeah, that maybe they didn't feel like it was the most professional because you didn't have the $100,000 van. Instead, you pulled up in your SUV. But there's also a lot of people that you can still impress them and be professional, even though you don't have, you know, the most expensive shop yet or the most professional van yet. I think that there is always things that you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm probably sometimes I play into that one where sometimes I'll say like, oh, you need to have quality content, you need to be presentable and everything like that. But there's also a back end part that I want to talk about is like just being a good person will do wonders more than anything else, right? You can have that fancy shop, but if you're not a good person, then it really doesn't matter, right? So when you have like your mobile, for example, just get to know, hey, how are the kids doing? How is John and Sally doing? Just getting to know their life, that can do wonders for you guys. Yeah. You actually have to care too. That's why you do it, right? You don't just do it for the sake of it. You actually have to care deeply as a person to actually connect to this person. So when I say that, don't just do it for the sake of it. Actually care for the person.
Yeah, 100%. If you're just like faking it and you're just trying to do it to get something out of it, it's going to show through. You've got to do it because you actually care.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other like little, I don't know, little things like that to like, just increase like the customer's experience and really build a good relationship, like practical tips for guys that are doing stuff mobily?
I think something that a lot of people forget about doing is the post-service follow-up. That's what we see most of. A lot of times it's like, well, the people will service the customer and then they'll never reach back out to that person. So even just like reaching out a month later, like, hey, John, how's the coating holding up on your Mazda? That can do so much. Opens the conversation back up. Like, hey, it's great. Actually, my neighbors are saying this is awesome. I told this person, told that person about you guys. And it really just really engages that person there. So even a simple phone call a month afterwards, 6 months afterwards, a year afterwards, it really does a lot because it goes back into the customer experience of bringing people in that they actually do care about their service. You do care about their vehicle and care about the person as a whole. So that's something you really can do. And that's how you get more referrals from that service as well.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing with paint protection film, are you seeing a lot of your shops that you're working with that are doing PPF really well? Are they doing a lot of follow-up with PPF and bringing people back in for post-service inspections and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times too, people will upsell them too. Let's just say, hey, you know, last time you were in here, you get your windows tinted. We can do that too, or anything like that. But yeah, certainly.
Because I've heard of locally, like a lot of my customers, I've heard them say like, oh, I don't want paint protection film. It peels, it yellows. I don't want that on my vehicle. And yet a lot of the guests that I've had on the podcast that seem to be doing PPF really well, it's like they hear those things, those complaints. They understand them, validate them. It's like, I understand that has been an issue in the past. And they try to help them walk them through why they're different. It's like, you know, you're going to come back in for a post-service follow-up, and we're going to make sure that nothing's lifting, and just make sure you're happy. And you kind of hold their hand through the process. And mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that it has to be perfect. Cause I think that's where a lot of our brains go, whether it's PPF or detailing or coatings. Like, you worry that if you reach back out then and it's not perfect, that, you know, the customer is going to want a refund or like, oh, I got to do all this extra work. It's like, I won't even reach out. But I think there's a balance. Yeah. Like, you can still set an expectation up front that it's not going to be perfect. But at the same time, still like walk them through it, hold their hand, and make sure that they're happy with it.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, I think if I do a bad job, I want to know about it, right? So you, it hurts the ego to learn that you maybe you did a bad job on PPF and it's peeling or something happened on it, or you have a piece of hair stuck in tin or something. But that's how you get better as a business, is you learn from those mistakes there. Because if you have an echo chamber for everyone telling you you're great, how do you actually get better, right? You need, I want to say, be careful with this one, but you have to have people that like will highlight the flaws and mistakes. And that's how you get better as a business. You plug holes in the ship and you can get better. That's something we do and encourage at our agency too. And that's how we evolved to the place where we're at. And that's how we grew very quickly with everything. Was when I first got started, I asked them like, what's great? And they'll say everything. I said, okay, what's bad? And they'll say, oh, nothing is fine. I'm like, no, what's actually bad? I want you to tell me so that way I can improve on it and do better. And we continue to evolve. And that's how you really accelerate the growth of your business. So you tack on the things, because sometimes some people have okay with this, but a lot of times we don't like to be negative with each other. We don't want to say and give negative feedback like this could be better, that could be better. But for me personally, as a business owner, I want to know those things so that way I can fix them and make sure that everything is better top to bottom with everything. But going back to the PPF thing, I think also too goes into a lot of people like to focus on themselves when it comes to selling PPF, about like what makes them PPF special and everything, rather than focusing on the customer, about how it benefits them, their pain points, and talking about them and going from there. Because a lot of times people will do that with coatings, PPF, window tint, when in all reality, especially on a sales call, the person are talking to them, you're listening to them and you're hearing what they have to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes someone might call in for one service, and then after asking those questions and really listening, it's like you realize that they're actually suited for something else.
Exactly. Exactly there. So a lot of times we have what's called like the leading questions. When someone inquires for a service, you ask them, you know, what they're looking for, what their plans of the vehicles are, what kind of protection are they looking for, you know, because why people buy, there's a lot of different reasons why people buy PPF. It could be for, maybe it's your baby, it's a weekend car, it's a daily driver. The more you understand what they're looking for, the better you can assess what they need on there. So a lot of times people too, detailers have sometimes struggle with this one, where they ask, hey, how much is PPF? And they'll give them a quote and they'll go and call five other detailers until someone asks these questions and really is able to work with them on that side. Because what happens there is you start the lead or the person calling in now realizes, okay, this person isn't here to sell me. They're here to actually help me out. And that's what business is you're solving people's problems.
Yeah. Yeah. On that topic, I called every shop in my city 2 weeks ago for a Porsche that I was working on. I wanted to know what it would cost to get it tinted. And every single tint shop I called, one of them asked, do you want ceramic or carbon, I think is what they asked. And then like one of them asked, like no one was asking me, you know, if what are the reasons why you're getting tint, or have you had tint before? And I was wondering, since we're still new to tint, like maybe that's normal. Like maybe that's how it is in the industry, is just to kind of immediately go to price. But I don't know, there's got to be some kind of balance there with window tint.
Yeah, window tint's a little different again because it is a commoditized service. But a lot of times people won't know ceramic and they won't know carbon. So going off that off the bat there is not usually the best approach. Usually work up into it there. So you say, okay, why do you want window tint? Is it appearance? Sure, then maybe the lower quality film will be better there. If you do want heat rejection out of it, okay, I'm going to suggest this ceramic film because actually we'll do that there compared to the lower price options on there. So we always want the most educated leads, but we don't know how educated they are until we ask those questions, right? And then when we start doing that, because leads are, once they're confused, they don't buy. When someone's confused about any of the kind of service, you start going into like, oh, this PPF is, you know, 4 mils thick or whatever, and you start going like that. But they're confused, like, all right, I don't know what this is, I'm not going to buy that one. So you have to ask those questions, get their understanding of what they know, what they don't know, and then you can build up from there.
The hardest part with window tinting is the shade. It's like a lot of people don't know what shade they want.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's always best done in shop. You can actually show those kind of things there. But actually, if you can have certain things on your website, say, hey, you know, on our website, we have different options we can see on there. But regardless, bring the car over to the shop and we'll kind of play around with different options.
Yeah. Yeah. The website simulator, I think that really helps. I got a lot of people that are like, I want to stay legal, you know, and that's a hard question because it's like, well, to stay legal, like truly legal, it's like we're going to have to put a 50%, you know, film on it, or unless you've got like a 40% film, at least in my state, because the legal limit's 35, you know. But a lot of that, the smoked glass on the front, it's like slightly tempered, you know. So when you put like a 35 film over it, it might actually read like 28. So that's something that we've been kind of dealing with lately too, is just like figuring out how to talk to those people that want truly legal, or at least that's what they tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same situation here in Jersey. I think the legal tint here is 50%, if it is at all. A lot of things aren't legal here in Jersey, so we definitely have to play around with everything. And all my vehicles are tinted to different degrees as well. Again, going into like why I buy tint for a Porsche is different than why I bought tint for my F-150, for example, or my wife's car too. So there's all different reasons why you have to understand why someone's buying a certain product or looking for a certain product. You can sell back into it that way.
Yeah. I think that it was really disappointing that every single shop, they didn't mention anything about it. Just, they weren't asking any questions, you know. It was just automatically priced, but it also just goes to show like the ways that you could set yourself apart from everyone.
Exactly. That's why I said before, like the bar has never been lower to be great, because if you can execute the fundamentals at a high level, you'll be fine. I like to use an example recently, because I got my garage floor, I got epoxy flooring on my floor recently. And I called up the top three most recommended businesses that apply those coatings to floors. Two out of the three didn't answer. The third one that did answer is the one that got my business. And I was, one follow up the next day, the other one didn't follow up at all. So it was just like the best ability is availability a lot of times, because I was looking, it was an emergency. It's not like I need my floor done tomorrow. It's like I'm looking to get this done kind of thing. So it's definitely answer the phone, ask questions. That alone can separate yourself by far. It sucks to get to the point, and then when you get to the higher levels, then okay, what kind of questions am I asking? How am I being portrayed online? Then you can really get to nitty gritty things. But if you just execute the fundamentals, that's all you really need to get started.
Yeah, I agree. And you got to do those things a little bit for a little while. Like, it usually always takes longer than people expect. You know, they expect to be, you know, it's like, okay, I'll do that. But it's been a month since you opened your business. You know, you got to give it a little bit of time.
Yeah, there's a saying that it always costs more than you think and longer than you think.
That's so true, man. Gosh. Yeah. That's so true. And it's disappointing, but then you get into it and you have enough experience with life, and then you're like, okay. Like, you can start to shut down that side of your brain that thinks that this is going to be like another get rich quick scheme type thing. It's like that doesn't exist.
Yeah. There's a paradox. I forget what it's called, and someone's watching this or listening to us is going to be screaming at me right now. But it's like when you dive into something, you have that confidence, like, oh, this is easy. And you're up at the top there. And once you get into it, I'm like, oh, this is actually really hard. You're at the bottom. And you build up the knowledge gap of getting back up to that point. There is, I forget what that's called. And it's really annoying me that I can't remember what it is. But
is that the Dunning-Kruger?
I think so.
Yeah.
It sounds very familiar.
Yeah, it is. Yep. I'm looking at it right now.
That's exactly what it is.
You highly think skilled individuals tend to underestimate their skills, but people with low ability in a given area overestimate their own skill. So it's a similar idea. There might be a slightly different one you're talking about, but similar idea.
Yeah, similar idea for sure. Even when we do new services at agency, for example, like, oh, we can for sure do that. When we get feedback from a shop, yeah, we can definitely do that. We get into it, I'm like, this is actually a little more complex than we thought. So let's spend the next couple of weeks building this out there, and we'll test it out again.
Yeah. Are you guys working with any mobile detailers?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. We work from guys anywhere from 15K a month to 10 million a year. So we work with quite a range of shops.
Wow.
And mobile guys. I just use shops as a blanket term for everybody. But yeah, certainly a lot of mobile guys use us too.
Yeah. I would imagine that the way that you work with the $10 million a year business versus the mobile guy is probably a lot different.
It's definitely a lot different, right? If I marketed the $10 million shop the same way as a mobile guy, it wouldn't work out that way. There's different systems you put in place too, from the CRM that we manage, from the newsletters that go out there, to the nurture flows and everything. Even just how we communicate too, on just coaching them through the calls and how they experience certain things, it's all completely different.
Yeah, I was wondering, do you have any sales advice, or like anyone in the industry that you recommend people looking at and gaining, like learning from when it comes to sales?
We have a lot of sales. I mean, I don't want to toot our own horn, but we have a lot of internal sales resources. We had a coaching call with all of our shops a week or two ago to kind of go over to what we see in the industry, because we can pull from a lot of different data points from our shops on what's working well and everything. So we have a lot of internal sales resources with everything. But there's certainly a lot of great salespeople out there. And I think probably the biggest thing is don't be scared to look outside our industry too. So there's a lot of great salespeople. They're just generally great at sales, and they're sales coaches, mentors. They have videos online on YouTube about how to do certain things. A lot, that's how we get a lot of good ideas from marketing too, because sometimes there's an industry that explodes. There's some marketing technique or there's some sales technique that's killing it for them. It can be applied to detail industry as well. So don't be agnostic to looking at other avenues and just kind of being a sponge to other large businesses too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Sales is a tricky one, especially for me, because I'm always like balancing sales with morals and values and ethics, because sales is definitely the worst industry for like poor ethics and morals. And so I think it's really important, especially for people out there that, you know, want to uphold your morals and your values to balance that, you know, don't get too carried away with always just like, just cause this guy's selling the most doesn't always make him, the best person, you know? And so you've got to balance that. There's people that'll call in wanting a ceramic coating that have no business getting a ceramic coating, and you could sell that person a ceramic coating. They'll take your money, but you would know at the end of the day that probably wasn't the best thing for them.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely a tough thing that I've had to learn to balance.
Yeah. I'll say this way then, the best way you can reframe that one is you're guiding someone to decision. That's what sales are. Once you realize you sit in that mindset, it takes the pressure off. You don't feel manipulative or anything like that because you're guiding someone to a decision. If it's not a fit, it's not a fit there. No, if you lack morals and you lack everything, then that's all on you. But we run sales the same way, where if someone wants to work with us and we feel like there's a better route, I'll tell them. We reject shops all the time there. So I don't think you should work with us. And they get really confused. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, don't work with us. I don't think you're a fit yet. Or you have to do this instead. Or I recommend on that side. So all you're doing is just guiding someone to decision. If you truly believe in your product too, you should never feel that way as well with everything. Because you're truly, if you feel like you're that person with the best experience with you versus your competitors, that should also come through in your sales process. Like, I truly believe that your best option for coding is going to be us there. So that also goes into how you feel about follow-ups. Like, you're following up, not just for sake of it, but because you want to help that person. You don't want that person to get a bad experience with another person. You want the person to get a good experience with you guys on that one. So it does go into morals first and what you believe in and what you actually want to achieve out of that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I think the best salespeople that are still like highly ethical, like they really believe that they're like what they're good at and what you reached out for, which is what we specialize in. Like, we know that we're going to be able to take care of you more than anyone else. And so like, that's why they're able to follow up with people consistently. Even though someone might not have answered the phone 5 times, it's like you keep following up just because like, you know, how valuable your service is and how much better you are than all your competition.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, if someone's looking for a service and you believe in your product, like why, I mean, it's different for everybody and why they believe like they should be able to help that person out there. But essentially what it is, again, business is just solving problems. And we believe we can solve this problem the best. We can almost guarantee that you're not going to have a crappy experience with us. We're going to take care of you. You can be part of our family. And that's what you believe in. So when you start looking at sales that way, it makes it a lot easier to digest having to do 5 follow-ups and having to pick up the phone and talk to people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that if you don't feel like that, then it's a sign that maybe you should look internal. It's like, why do I not feel motivated to reach out? Or why do I not feel confident with it? Like, what can change internally about our business to make us the best fit for this type of service that can make us better?
Exactly. It's being, again, just customer first, customer focus. Once you have that one, because what happens a lot of times in sales, again, going back to things we talked about earlier in this podcast, but like, we focus so much on ourselves and our presentation and what we're saying and our service and our quality. And we forget that there's another person at the end of the line. When we focus on them and guiding them and helping them out, it takes the pressure. It doesn't even feel like sales at that point. It's just talking to the person.
Yeah. I love that. Where is a good place for people to reach out if they want to learn more about your business?
Yeah, we have a couple of different places. If you're on Facebook, you can DM me directly. Hunter Zarzicki right there. If not, admotive.com. You actually will have direct access to my calendar too. So you can book a call. There'll be one of us on there. We can talk over your marketing. We can talk about sales. We can just chat about whatever you want to. But those are two of the easiest ways to reach out.
All right, cool. I'll put the link in the description of the podcast as well.
Sounds good. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for talking, Hunter. This has been great. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Cool. Well, thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.